sterile processing itself has very little ability to affect the problem of dried soils. It's really all the other departments that must work together to help Central Sterile to have a better process when the instrumentation finally arrives.
Beyond Clean offers a creative look into the inner workings of a healthcare industry committed to getting it right. Every instrument, every time. Join us every week as we explore the hidden world of one of the most important aspects of safe surgical care. And now your hosts, Michael Matthews, Hank Balch, and Justin Poulin.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Peggy Spitzer, Clinical Education and Technical Support at Sertol International. Peggy is a Colorado native with over 30 years of combined experience as a healthcare provider and educator, holding degrees as a licensed dental hygienist with bachelor's and master's degrees in adult education. She provides education programs across the U.S. to sterile processing and APIC chapters, focusing on helping clinicians use cleaning chemicals safely and effectively. She is proud to promote education and certification in central sterile processing. Peggy is a past president, past secretary, and current treasurer of the Rocky Mountain Central Sterile Chapter in Denver, Colorado, and also provides consulting to healthcare facilities and universities for chemical management and best practices for instrument processing. This is part two of our interview with Peggy. Part one was excellent. If you haven't listened to that yet, make sure you go back. Lots of good conversation about regulations for detergent, using gloves and prep and pack. But now we're going to dive into enzymatic detergents and really get into TAS and several other topics. And Peggy is such an engaging speaker. I'm really looking forward to having her on again this week.
That's right, Justin. In part one, we talked about a lot of the confusion in the industry in regards to disinfecting and cleaning. I'm looking forward to talking to Peggy on this part two about the confusion around enzymes in general. What are they? What do they do? Is more always better? That should be a great conversation with a true subject matter expert in the field.
Yeah, guys, I always love it when we kind of peel the layers back on what the common practices are and really start talking about the science that's going on behind the scenes. Peggy's a great guest to do this for us. You know, everybody's using enzymatics in their department. Let's talk about what they are and how they actually work.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs. Are you ready for AIMI ST-108 released in 2023? Evoqua Water Technologies can help you prepare. Our water experts participated in the development of the new standard and understand the impact medical device reprocessing has on patient safety. Evoqua offers water purification systems specifically designed to help sterile processing departments meet the critical water requirements and strict standards of AIMI ST-108. With locations across the United States, we stand by ready to help you with your sterile processing water needs so you can focus on your core priority, patient safety. Contact Evoqua today for a site audit and ST-108 guidance. Visit www.evoqua.com/beyondclean to learn more. That's EVOQUA.com/beyondclean.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is Peggy Spitzer, clinical educator and technical support at Sertol International. This is part two. And Peggy, in part one, we talked about so many great things and especially the whole lack of regulation. And I think a great leaping off point to our topic for part two around enzymes. Why don't we just talk about enzymes? What makes them exciting and what are they exactly? Just to set the table for our listeners and give them a basic understanding.
Very good. So I'll explain about enzymes as a component of a number of different products, but of course, primarily we're focusing on medical detergents. Enzymes have been in use for a long time. They've been in use in a wide variety of applications, making beer, using enzymes in laundry detergents. So there have been the applications for enzymes. But primarily what they are is enzymes are proteins. They're organic. They're natural substances. Enzymes are found in many different types of things in organic, natural substances. So enzymes are found in human persons inside of our digestive tract, and they break down proteins, fats, etc. And that's basically what we're using enzymes for in medical detergent. Enzymes are in there to help the detergent work better, and especially to help the detergent work better at a neutral or very gentle pH. We used to have a lot of applications for alkaline detergent, and alkaline detergent is still very useful, but it does tend to be more aggressive, and is especially more aggressive on certain types of soft metals. So it was found that if we added enzymes to detergents, we could get a little boost of cleaning power and make the detergent somewhat closer to neutral pH, which is approximately 7 to 8 pH. The enzymes like that neutral pH, as well as making them work more effectively. So enzymes, because they're organic, they do have certain characteristics. Enzymes are like people. They like to be comfortable. They don't want to be too hot. They don't want to be too cold. If they're too cold, they tend to slow down and not work very effectively. But when they are warm and ready to work, then they are helping the detergent to actually attack various targeted organic substances to break them down, just as enzymes do in human digestion. So enzymes are very targeted. Protease attacks proteins. Lipase attacks fats. And amylase attacks starches. So all these enzymes are present to help break these soils down in this very gentle, neutral pH medical detergent. And it was found that by using these enzymes in detergents, that it would make the detergent more effective in breaking down especially fatty soils in endoscopes. And endoscopes were too delicate to be cleaned with aggressive alkaline detergent. So they became more and more popular as they were found to be so effective in attacking these various types of soils.
So Peggy, you're kind of walking us into what I'll call the great cleaning debate. You know, so even with this exciting application now of enzymes in the medical space and in detergents, there's still a raging conversation out there. To enzyme or not to enzyme, that is the question. Or in another way, how many enzymes is enough? Are we good for a single, or is the more the merrier? Can I get by with a surfactant alone? You kind of help settle that debate or at least get us started on a little perspective?
Yes, we can talk a little bit about where enzymes are really useful and do you really have to have them for everything. First of all, I would like to also clarify that although enzymes are very useful, they do have their certain aspects of handling that can make them less useful to the hospital setting, depending on how they've been handled. And also, enzymes are somewhat of an issue to the medical detergent manufacturer. And let me address that second thing first. Organic enzymes are not easy to handle. And because they're not easy to produce and handle, there is a certain cost to putting enzymes in detergents. There's been an effort over many years now to develop more effective surfactants that would work in breaking up soils without having to have enzymes present. Because although enzymes are very useful, they certainly do add to the cost of a medical detergent. On top of that, the medical detergent also becomes more of an issue for shelf life. Enzymes, again, are organic. They don't last indefinitely. And to make matters more interesting, the protease part of the enzymatic content will actually affect other enzymes. Let me repeat that. Protease enzymes, by their nature, eat protein. Enzymes are protein. Therefore, the various enzymes, protease enzymes, will actually cannibalize or break down other enzymes in the formula. And that is exactly why enzyme detergent does have a very definite shelf life. And the fresher it is, the more active it is. So what enzymatic detergent manufacturers must do is a delicate balancing act of how to formulate the product, how to have preservatives in it, and have other agents plus compatible surfactants. And all of this is additional cost to the detergent manufacturer. So to have a really good quality enzymatic detergent is not a cheap process. So I would say that this is probably one aspect to the movement, as it were, of trying to develop detergents that have better surfactants and therefore get around the whole aggravation of having enzymatic content in manufacturing medical detergents. But there are some aspects to enzymatic detergents that users need to be aware of. Enzymes are an excellent tool, but they are also something that the user in the hospital setting, in the sterile processing department, needs to understand that because these enzymes are organic and they do break down in the process of cleaning and in the process of, for example, an ultrasonic tank, in the ultrasonic tank, the enzymes will actually be broken down along with the soils, and therefore there will be enzyme residue that could be left on instruments without thorough rinsing. And this could theoretically at some point contribute to endotoxin. It can also contribute to enzyme residue that could be a serious problem if not thoroughly rinsed on certain types of devices and instruments. And the one that I'm thinking of is most of interest is the issue with TAS, toxic anterior segment syndrome, which is typically caused by residue on eye instruments. So what this really points us to with all chemical products is the importance of rinsing. Is every bit as important as the steps that came before it for cleaning, because without getting all the residue off and getting the residue of soil and the chemicals, there will be problems later on, because sterilization doesn't remove residue. It's killing, but it's not removing anything. So I would repeat again that rinsing is absolutely critical, and it is most critical in the use of enzymatic products.
And Peggy, we're going to talk a little bit more about TAS here in just a little bit. But before we do that, I wanted to take a few steps back in the process and think through, you know, just what is the impact of blood drying on the instruments before it actually makes it into decontam. We talk about it all the time on the show that cleaning has to begin in the OR at the point of use. And if it doesn't and the blood dries on the instruments, you know, what kind of effect does that have on the effectiveness of the enzymatics?
That's an excellent question. And they are actually all tied together. We work in the medical industry, and so we know that we are going to have organic soils, including especially, of course, blood soils, on instrumentation at the point of use. So this is going to be in the operating area, it could be in the emergency department, could be labor and delivery. Every place where there is patient treatment, there's the opportunity for patient soils and particularly blood. However, blood is not the only problem soil that can dry on instrumentation. So I do want to also point out that there's also inorganic soils that can cause mischief, bone cement being a particularly bad one, antiseptics that get on instrumentation that can be corrosive. So I will mention that there are other items, other soils besides blood soil. But when we talk about enzymes, We're talking about enzymatic detergents that specifically have an effect on breaking down organic soils. And those would be, of course, the blood and fats, etc. So where dried blood is particularly a problem is that dried blood acts like a net, and it's keeping all the other soils and the bacterial contamination against the surface of the instrument. It's a very effective net of biofilm. And as the biofilm and the blood dries, the fibrin that's in the blood makes this net more and more effective to the point where it just is glued to those instruments. Unfortunately, at the same time, the blood is also corrosive. So you have a multiple effect of both damage to instruments and an increase in bacterial contamination as the instrumentation makes its way from point A to point B. So where is the impact of enzymatic activity in this prevention of these dried soils? We know that there are many types of pretreatment products that do not have enzymes, and there are many types of pretreatment products that do have enzymes. So is it crucial to have enzymatic content in these sprays in order to have a true prevention of dried blood soil? In my opinion, the most important thing to happen in this transition from point A to point B is that a facility must do their very best to minimize the waiting time. That is more important than almost anything else. And we know that there will be delays, even with the best organization at a particular hospital. I think the important thing is to know that these pre-cleaning sprays that many facilities are using can do more than just keep items wet, but only if they have the right type of enzyme content in them. It's the enzymes that will actually start soil breakdown in addition to keeping the instruments wet between the point of use and the point of actual instrument processing. The idea here is if the enzymes are breaking down soils during transport, this will actually help reduce corrosion and biofilm. So it's really helpful to have a product that does more than just keeping the instruments wet. Another issue I've heard about from facilities that have recently been through survey is that they are sometimes asked if they know how they have compliance. So in this particular situation, being able to have a product that has visibility may also be helpful to the facility to help drive compliance between point of use and sterile processing.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I'll even go back to an interview that we had with Bob Mars from Asculap, and he was describing when he was a manager, one of the things, and I believe this is correct, guys. I hope I'm referencing the right interview, but I'm pretty sure he had sent a liaison up, especially during those orthopedic cases, to go pull the instruments out of the OR even during the case. And again, especially the long ones, because of that very reason. We know point of use is so key. We know the Joint Commission is really targeting on that now. And I thought Bob's point, and I'm surprised when you talk about throughput and just the way that the department, just the way that the system is set up, you always hear about bottlenecks being caused by push through. And so everything's just stopping and it backs up like you described. It's backing up at the dedicated elevator. It's backing up in decon. But if you take that extra effort, and you're just describing that situation, that the paradigm as it stands today does not encourage sterile processing to be involved in part of the solution with this point of use cleaning. I just thought Bob was doing something many, many years ago that was really, I'd say, forward thinking. And I would be surprised if over time we don't see a little bit more blending of those two departments and that there's somebody that's actually responsible for pulling the instruments out and ensuring that. And you make a great point about the point of use and the prevention of dried debris being the real key point of emphasis for success with infection prevention and the formation of biofilms.
It is the prevention of dried soil is a true multi-department mission. It really takes every part of the hospital to make that particular activity work properly. And I think it's really unfortunate that the issue of dried soil and instrument damage and everything else that goes with it, that that's really been laid on central sterile processing in the past, when in fact they have almost nothing that they can do. By the time the instrumentation gets to central sterile processing, the damage has been done. The soil is dry. The biofilm is there. Central sterile processing can do very little at that point. It is really a team effort by the entire facility. And this is where I think infection prevention is actually a crucial department to get involved in this process of preventing dried soil. And as the representative of a company that manufactures a product, I will also surprise departments by telling them that product is only one part of this. In fact, is actually a relatively small part of the solution, because it takes the actual cooperation and motivation of the folks at point of use. If the folks at point of use do not understand their role in preventing dried soil and therefore being able to have good instrumentation come back to them, they will not be motivated to participate. They'll just keep sending dried soil on instruments down to central sterile processing and expecting them to do something with it. It's really quite maddening if they don't understand how important their role is.
And those are, unfortunately, those are some of the big headlines across the country when there's major quality issues. If it's not endoscope reprocessing, we have dirty instruments coming back to the OR. And you're right, the question, you know, typically starts back in sterile processing. What's going on there? What's going on there? But if you look at some of these reports, even the CMS report that came out of Detroit Medical, it all went back to the OR room and all this noncompliance at the point of use. And not to throw the OR under the bus, because you're right, this has got to be a concerted team effort. It's not just one team's fault. It's that whole continuum and the whole chain of command. But I would not be doing our listeners justice if I did not get you at least for a couple of moments here to talk also on the challenge of TAS. I know you mentioned it earlier, but besides the endoscope reprocessing challenges, I think this is one of the more frightening ones, and it's also the ones that is on the radar of surveyors, but then also on the radar of hospital administrators who want to do the right thing when it comes to protecting their patients. So if you would, you know, talk a little bit about some of the challenges that you're seeing out there, maybe some non-best practices, and then if you have some solutions or some tip for how folks can work through confronting this challenge of TAS.
First, I'd like to explain that TAS is an issue of a microcontamination that occurs on microsurgical instruments, with the biggest impact in the area of eye instruments. So ocular instrumentation is typically our target when we're talking about TAS. This is because the amount of contamination that it would take to cause a problem is just so tiny. It takes so little material to cause a very, very big problem. We probably have microcontamination on a lot more instrumentation than we realize. I don't know if there's been any research. I certainly haven't run across anything that identifies microcontamination in other types of surgical sets and so forth, where it has the impact that TAS has had on eye instruments. We do know that there have been some studies showing the effects of lint and other types of materials. I know I've seen those from certain other speakers that I've listened to, in particular at the ISHM conference. So in the area of TAS, what causes TAS are a number of different types of contamination. And this would include those microfibers, tiny bits of lint, viscoelastic material that's used during the eye surgeries. Sometimes this is caused by, unfortunately, facilities trying to reuse cannulas and other tiny microscopic devices that are basically either single use or are so difficult to clean that they should be single use. So there is some problems there with some improper cleaning of single use devices and materials. And that would be a big issue. And then the issue of TAS that's related to enzymes is the fact that the enzymatic material, as I had mentioned earlier, is organic, that enzymes do break down. They break down each other as well as coming apart during just the cleaning process and sonication, and that some of this end product is endotoxin. Endotoxin is really not, it is not viable. It is not alive. You can't kill it like a virus or a bacteria. And that really makes it dangerous because any tiny amount of it can cause some really serious problems. So whether the enzyme detergent was used or not, we're not really sure if that was the major cause of some of these TAS outbreaks. But any type of detergent and chemical residue could potentially cause TAS, along with these microfibers, little bits of lint or viscoelastic. So the ultimate decision has been made by a number of organizations and facilities to tell our instrument processors, eye instruments, that they should not use enzymatic detergent as a precaution. I think this is actually a very reasonable stance to take because eye instrumentation, although it certainly can be contaminated, and some of the material is certainly needs to be cleaned off, it does not take the extra firepower of an enzymatic detergent to do that cleaning. There are even facilities that have elected to forego using any types of detergent for the eye instrument cleaning process. And unfortunately, in the absence of research on the end product of that decision, that is, are the instruments getting clean, I don't know if that is the proper decision to make, to not use any detergent at all. But I do think it's a reasonable decision to forego enzymatic products to avoid this one potential risk of TAS. The end point of TAS, to prevent TAS, is to have a very thorough rinsing process with a high-quality water final rinse, preferably sterile water, being used for the final rinse. This is very reasonable because eye instruments are very tiny. You're not talking about large quantities of rinse water. It's a very doable type of thing to have high-quality water for this final rinse of eye instrumentation, and certainly worth the extra effort for the type of risks that a failure of the cleaning and rinsing process would cause.
I'll tell you, Peggy, we've had that conversation about rinsing on the show in maybe the last several months, and it's something that we've always considered to be very underrated point of emphasis in the industry. So thank you for emphasizing that again. You've done an awesome job with part one and part two the last couple of weeks, and I just wanted to thank you for coming on the show and sharing your wealth of knowledge with our listeners.
Well, I'm very happy to participate in your education activity. I believe that it's really important to share knowledge and information. And I can tell you that anything that I have learned, whatever I do know, it's basically because of the very good questions that people ask. They call, they ask me questions at events and programs, and I learn so much from those questions.
That was Peggy Spitzer, clinical educator and technical support at Sertol International. The two segments we did with Peggy were fantastic, guys. And I think the one that really hit home for me, and we know it's been a big topic in the industry lately, but point of use cleaning, so important. And in Peggy's words, more important than anything else, even an enzymatic and other products, which are important, but less crucial if these instruments are processed more quickly and at the point of use. I can't stress enough. I think we're going to hear more and more about this point of use and that partnership with the OR and how critical it is to reducing infections and readmissions for surgical site infections.
We talk so many times about how so many of the episodes connect to each other. And right now when we start talking about the collaboration that's required between the OR and the SPD, I'm immediately thinking back to our interview that we did Yeah, guys, and we talk about so many times how our how some episodes just kind of click with other episodes that we've discussed previously, and you know, just talking about the necessary collaboration between the OR and SPD to get that point of use cleaning right really took me back to our interview with David Taylor for OR Today Live. One of their hallmarks was establishing that collaboration, and that's the only thing that's really going to solve that deep cultural problem of fixing dried blood on instruments and the drastic effects that it can have.
Mike, I'm going to take that opportunity for a shameless plug. I will be speaking at the 2018 OR Today Live conference in Nashville. So if you don't already have plans, I believe it's the end of August in Nashville, you can come and see some of that collaboration and education firsthand for yourself. But back to the show. I came away from this segment with another idea for another interview all about rinsing in the sterile processing space. Justin talked about how important that is, and then Peggy highlighted it in particular in reference to the TAS challenge. We've really got to get somebody on, talk specific about that step, about water quality in the decontamination stage. A lot of content there. So I'm already looking forward to the next one, guys. I don't know about y'all.
Yeah, I think it's an important topic. We didn't get into dilution of enzymatic or detergents in general in too much detail, but we can piggyback that into our next interview, like you said, Hank. That's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes and Stitcher. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, or if you'd like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Hank, Mike, and myself, thank you for listening to another edition of Beyond Clean.